75 years ago, the group, the Boston Printmakers, held their inaugural show. The show was remarkable for the diversity of artists because it included artists of color at a time when the art world was especially exclusionary. The group will celebrate that inaugural show with a new exhibition, Diversity in Boston's Printmaking, this year at the Howard Thurman Center at Boston University. And FYI, Boston University is the license holder for WBUR. So in studio, we have two guests with us, with their art, to help us explore Boston's hidden history of Black printmaking. I have with me Mr. Edmund Barry Gaither. He's the director of Museum of the National Center of Afro-American Artists and an art historian and museum curator who's worked on numerous exhibitions. Thank you for being here.
I'm very pleased to join you.
Thank you. And I have Tori Weston, writer and fine artist based in Somerville, studied printmaking at the School of the Museum of Fine Arts, which is where the Boston printmakers really got their start back in the late 1940s. Thank you, Tori.
Thank you for having me.
I am excited for you both to be here. Tori, I'll start with you. I want to describe the medium because I don't think a lot of people know what printmaking is. Like, how is it different from other two-dimensional arts? Like, how's it different from, like, painting, collage, watercolors? Basic question, but kind of important to get us started.
Okay. I can only speak from my experience. I first identify as a writer. And so when I came to printmaking, I had, you know, done drawing, done some other things. But I feel like printmaking is a creative process that aligned the way writing aligned for me. So there really is, like, especially lithography, where you really have to think about what you want.
What is lithography?
Lithography is area of printmaking where you use an aluminum sheet or a stone.
So something that's not paper necessarily.
Yes.
Okay,
and
gotcha.
You put your image. It's the sort of like the marriage or divorce of oil and and ink. I mean, ink and water. And one of the things that I loved about lithography was putting down, like, you really have to work to prepare your stone or prepare your plate before you even put down an image. And then you spend some time with that image when you're putting it down. And then there's a whole process to get ready to print, you know, by putting it together, putting the gum arabic on to protect the print, getting it all ready, using acid to stomp out any places
where
you don't want.
That's an evolved process. But can I ask you, because I really like asking artists this question, what does it feel like to make one of these?
Let's just say it's a good ache. One of the things I missed in
a good ache, like hurt.
A good ache.
Okay, AC. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, one of the things I missed about the pandemic, which I haven't done litho since then, is the, you know, you. I was using a stone big enough to have to use a lift, and then you're putting it on the press bed. You know, right now my cuticles are intact. Normally they're not. Because you're constantly washing your hands and then, you know, you have gloves on, but also just putting on the press bed, getting the press bed ready, figuring out which kind of how much pressure you want to put on before you run it through and hopefully pull a good print. It usually takes a few times to do it, but I feel like it's the trial and error. And sometimes the what you drew and put down on the litho, like either on the stone or the aluminum plate, or even if you do etching or woodwork, sometimes that first reveal when you pull up the print is awesome because you're just like, oh my God, I did that.
Yeah.
And then
that's
sometimes,
like a thing I made. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like, okay, I didn't ink this enough. Or,
yeah.
And you go back to the process. So I feel like it is something where even when you pull something that is beautiful, you have to look over your shoulder and know, okay, now we have to, that's one. Now we have to go back and do all that all over again.
May I add a footnote
or
two?
Go,
because
go for it.
On the museum side of it, we are always having to reckon with these things and with the language and the definition. One of the key things about printmaking is that you can make multiples. So you're not limited to only one. And multiples count as original as long as the artist has overseen it and governed it and signs off on it. And when you run basically a test, and you pull something, we'd call that a proof. And if you rework that several times, then we would call each of those a state. And within the category of printmaking, lithography is a favorite. But you also have serigraph or silk screen,
yeah,
which is a different kind of technique, etching, aquatint.
Yeah.
So they're quite a woodblock. And these range in what they require for technology and for mastery, but they're all satisfying.
Just hearing you talk about it and how to go through the process really does sound satisfying, because it sounds like, you know, the idea of, like, the world is your canvas, and, you know, you could use a lot of surfaces and get really creative. But Mr. Barry Gaither, can I ask you about that first show in 1948 that brought together artists that would have probably never exhibited together before? The show included the artist Alan Crate. He was a black artist, very important printmaker. What do we know about that first show? Could you bring us back?
Well, I would mention in particular two people from that first show, because their presence in the show runs counter to what was often true nationally at the time. Alan Royne Crite, who'd come to Boston in 1910 and had really done all of his training and initial work here, was very interested in making his work available at a maximum level. And I knew him personally for decades and almost never saw him without a pencil in hand or some other instrument to jot down his ideas. In this local environment, he was able to be included in a professional show that was not sorted by race. The same was true for Calvin Burnett, who was the other African-American artist in that show. At the time that they appeared in that show, there were other environments where, for being as senior and as successful as those two people were in producing their art, they still wouldn't have been included in such a show, because these events were impacted by race across the board. And it was more the exception than the rule that people would appear there. Now, if you take either of those artists, and if you added to that number John Wilson and James Robin.
Well, can I, before we actually go to other artists, I want to know, like, the artists we talked about, including Alan Crite, what did that show do for his career?
Well, actually, it did not revolutionize his career. It gave him a great satisfaction to be recognized. And every artist wants his work to find a bigger audience. But Alan Crite made his living as a technical draftsman for the Department of the Navy. And he spent much of his time making a variation on traditional prints, eventually buying his own small offset machine and producing original illustrations for church purposes, because his mother had wanted three things for her son in this life. She wanted him to have a life in the arts, which he did. She wanted him to have a relationship to the Episcopal Church, which he had. And she wanted him to have a Harvard degree, which he eventually secured from the Extension School.
I would actually love to, since we're talking about this now, you brought in a couple of prints. Can we look at them?
Yes, I did. And I would call to attention right away this work from the late 1930s, because it represents the kind of religious subject matter that mattered so hugely to him.
And this is by Alan Crite.
This is by Alan Crite.
And it's a picture, I guess it's a...
It's the Holy Family in repose. That's the title of it. It's black and white, but he did frequently overpaint these prints with watercolor. And in many cases, he also added gold foil.
Yeah.
Because he was very interested in the look of ecclesiastical art. And some of those works approach stained glass in how you see them and come to know them.
What is it about this? What do you see when you look at this print?
Well, one of the first things that you would take note of is that the Holy Family is black.
Yeah.
Alan Crite set all of his sacred narratives with black people just about, and he wanted to make the point that to be in the Christian world was to appreciate everybody in it, including your neighbors. So his work draws on his neighbors and the community that he knew intimately to populate the holy personages. In another arena, he has a wonderful work of Mary riding the T.
Riding the T.
Riding the T.
Okay.
And she's there with her halo. Yeah. And her blue.
I'm sure she has a lot more patience than the rest of us.
Regular workmen, the everyday people who are on the tee going to and fro.
That sounds amazing. And Tori, can I bring you in? Would you also describe a print that is that stands out to you, one of your own, or what do you think when you look at that one?
Well, the first thing I think about is the amount of work and detail that's in that print. One of the things I love about printmaking is that it is okay to be tedious about things. It is okay to focus on small details. You know, one of the prints that I brought was one of the first prints I made, which is called a technique called a menuar, the gray stones print, where you first cover the stone with ink and then you etch out, like you scrape out what you want. So it's a good like lights and darks. And so I did the print of gray stones. It was for the SMFA print and paper department has what they call a class action suite where they do a theme. You vote on a theme, you vote on a size, and that year the theme was aliens, and I feel like Grace Jones is not of this world. She's just too amazing to be human. And so I did that print in also in honor of my uncle. My uncle Glenn Harris, who passed away a few years ago, he's the reason why I moved to Boston. He was a portrait artist in Boston in the late 70s and 80s, and so it was like a homage to him. But that was like sort of the first print where I really fell in love with printmaking, because I also had to make 52 of those prints, so I spent a lot of time in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you talk about how tedious it is to make a print, but at the same time, there's this idea of accessibility to it. And I want to know why it's important for artists like you, like why printmaking is maybe feels revolutionary in that way. And it's so, like you can make several of it, even though the first piece might have taken forever.
Yeah, you can make several of it. What I like about like, you know, printmaking is that, there's a way to make multiple prints, but I also feel like there's a way to make prints in a way where, like, if you make an edition of 12 or if you make an edition of 40, that once those are out in the world, those are out in the world. One of the things about litho is that, especially when you use a stone, most of the time, you know, you have to go to a studio like SMFA has a printmaking studio. There's soon to be a printmaking studio in Somerville. So it's a community space. So that image isn't going to exist once someone else decides to grind your image off of the stone and put their image on it. With the Grace Jones one, I dug so deep in the stone that I was told by my printmaking teacher, Carolyn Muscat, that she's like, you know, you're going to have to grind that stone yourself and make that so someone else can use that stone. And it took a while to get the image down and to make it flat and all that kind of stuff. But it was also, I feel like there's a, where I feel like paintings and drawings where you can keep the original image for printmaking, especially for litho, once you get rid of that plate, or once you get rid of the image on the stone, there's also a letting go process where I feel like is very cathartic in some ways, because when you grind that image off the stone, the image that you spent so much time with and you printed with, you've cut your fingers of with and everything, and then all of a sudden that stone gets put into place, and then someone else takes that stone off the shelf, and then they make another image. So it's also like a community thing too.
It's a community thing, and I want you to hit on that for a little bit. Like, what does it mean for printmaking to be a community thing, especially among Black artists who are in Boston?
Well, for me, like, because I took courses at SMFA, I didn't really meet any other Black printmakers until there was a couple of SMFA students who were in print and paper or paper making or taking a course. But the first printmaker of color I met was my friend Lennon. Her name's Lennon Mitchell. And she is, you know, Indigenous and Latina, and we became friends because we bonded really quickly. But also just going online and, you know, finding Instagram pages like Black Women of Print. There's a woman named Karen Rivas who's does revisionary prints out of North Carolina. So I really had to seek it out. And plus, being part of the Somerville community, I've been doing Somerville Open Studios for a few years now. It took me a while to find other Black artists in Somerville, even though there's over 300 artists in Somerville. It took a few years of me living there before I started finding other artists. Now, the other thing is that I did go to Emerson College. Mm. I used to work at Emerson College. So I knew other writers, but it took me a while to find other artists.
Yeah. So, Tori Weston, you're a writer and a fine artist based in Somerville. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and work. You can see a collection of her prints now, show, display at Somerville Public Library. Mr. Edmund Barry Geither, Director of Museum at the National Center of Afro-American Artists. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here.
Thank you. Next time you must get us more time.
I will try. Next show.